Hi, I'm Susan Lewis. I sat down with flutist Mimi Stillman, who founded the Philadelphia-based chamber group Dolce Suono, now in its 11th season. Stillman, who is also a historian, has become known for commissioning new works and for putting together programs tied together by a theme, often relating to an idea or a period in history. I asked her about her new CD, Freedom, which evolved along with her musical experiences, in contrast to some other recording projects.
Yes, sometimes recording projects develop all at once. For example, when Charles Abramovic and I, we've been a flute and piano duo for 14 years now, we're celebrating, we decided to do Odyssey, 11 American premieres, two CDs. We knew what we were getting in terms of repertoire at the beginning, or same other projects we have going on now with the music of Fauré or Prokofiev. We kind of plan the CD program all at once and then make that program the basis of our touring recitals in the time leading up to the recording. With this CD, Freedom, it developed over different years and through two commissions and one fortuitous discovery. I decided these three pieces really fit well together. The pieces really speak to the triumph of artistic freedom and the human spirit.
Could we take each piece individually and how they musically represent the idea?
Yes, the first piece on Freedom to come into my life was our Dolce Suono Ensemble commission of composer Richard Danielper. And this is, you know, he's a great Grammy-winning composer, faculty member at Curtis. I met him and started performing his music when I was still a student at Curtis, and then later recorded some of it for flute and piano. So I knew I wanted to commission him for flute, cello, and piano, one of our most active ensembles. And in talking to him, he decided to reflect on his Persian Jewish heritage. And he's an American composer, but his family background dates back to Iran, to biblical times, to the Babylonian captivity. And as Richard told me, it was really the first time that he reflected on this in his music. And what happened when he was writing in the summer of 2009, he was following the Green Revolution in Iran when the people were rising up for freedom against their oppressive regime, and had to inscribe this into the piece. And in fact, the tragic death of the young woman Neda Aga Sultan, who was shot by government forces, and then actually the video of her death on the streets of Tehran went viral at the time, was the impetus for Richard to title the piece Remembering Neda. So it's an incredibly emotional piece of music or piece of art, not just piece of chamber music for flute, cello, and piano. And the movements follow a narrative trajectory, lamentation, desecration, benediction, that is really emotionally gripping.
So it really does tell a story.
It does. And what Richard also puts in the music are remembered sounds from his year with his family in Iran as a child. So I switched to alto flute for part of this piece, which is a lower instrument with a very distinctive color. Charlie plucks inside of the piano, evoking a Persian lute. Richard is really combining some of the folkloric Persian sounds into the music.
So that's 2009, and you're performing that music. Then in 2011, you were researching music on the Holocaust and made a discovery.
Yes, and this was really a bit of luck because I was working on a Dolce Suono Ensemble concert, Remembering the Holocaust, with music by composers who were victims of the Nazis and later Israeli composers reflecting on this. And I was meeting with Brett Werb, musicologist at the National Holocaust Museum in Washington. After our very productive meeting, he asked me out of the blue, I just got back from Russia. I have a score for flute and piano by Mieczysław Weinberg. Do you want to see it? Well, of course I want to see it. I think I have a reputation for commissioning a lot of works and stealing a lot. I arrange a lot for flutes. So yes, of course I want to see this piece by Weinberg. And instantly I was captivated. I looked at the score. I called up Charlie Abramovic. We got together and read through it. Five pieces for flute and piano. Fell in love with it. And we gave the United States premiere and have played it on concert tours and then decided to record it and make the first recording of it.
It's so interesting because it's very different from the first piece, and it has five
exactly.
pieces,
mm-hmm.
and some of them are very dance-like and upbeat, and some of them are more soulful.
Yes, the Weinberg is a suite of contrasting character pieces, the five pieces for flute and piano. And you have landscape, the first one, with a lot of open spaces and a probable quote of Debussy, actually at the beginning in the flute part. And then you have first dance, second dance, and third dance, the corresponding second, third, and fifth pieces. Like his friend Shostakovich, Weinberg often used generic titles for his movements, like just dance, without any further description. Then the fourth movement is called Melody, and for us it's the emotional core of the set of pieces. It is a really romantic and lyrical movement in which the flute line soars over the piano accompaniment a little bit like a song, and then piano takes over this melody, often in its highest register later on, with flute almost contrapuntally accompanying the piano and winding around that line. And we find it really moving. This piece really casts a spell.
And this piece, unlike the other two, doesn't have a specific narrative.
That's true. I think... Well, we don't have program notes from the composer, unfortunately, and also because we don't have a performance tradition, there are no evidence of performances from shortly after its 1947 premiere and 1948 publication by the Soviet Composers Union, until I gave the U.S. premiere of it with Charlie in 2013. We think it just languished in the archive of the St. Petersburg Conservatory. So there's a lot we don't know about what the composer was thinking at the time. But what's also very fascinating is that the years in which he wrote it, coming out of World War II and then leading up to his own imprisonment by Stalin in 1953, his life was probably only saved by Stalin's death a few months later, as well as Shostakovich writing a letter in Weinberg's support. These are years in which Weinberg faced persecution, along with other composers, censorship by Stalin's government in the anti-formalist purge, and just a lot of fear of death.
So you're playing this piece, and it's a great piece, and you're enjoying it. And so now you have these two works. Had the idea for the CD come into your head?
Not yet. I think it was only after a while of living with and performing the Weinberg, touring with it, that I thought, also having learned about his personal history and survival of under the Nazis and the Soviets, that I thought this could be a really good pairing with both the Danielpour and my commissioned Sonata for Flute and Piano by David Finko.
Had you commissioned that yet?
Let me think for a second. I commissioned David to write a sonata for flute and piano in 2012, which I premiered with Charlie Abramovic in the following year. And then just given his both narrative for the work, but also David's background as a Soviet Jew who emigrated to the United States in order to become free, I thought this would be a really wonderful pairing with both the Weinberg and the Danielpour for the Freedom CD.
And David Finko was trained as an engineer in the Soviet Union in the 1950s. So the subject of this work, I understand, is his reflection on what might happen after a nuclear attack.
Yes, he's a composer with a fascinating background. His father was also a naval engineer, and then he worked on Soviet submarines and designed them before leaving the Navy to become a full-time composer in Russia. So I didn't really know what his program note would be like, but I'm not surprised that there could be a connection there. In that sense, his imagery of the flute, or my part, emerging from a devastating landscape after a nuclear holocaust is kind of Cold War imagery in many ways.
So you call the CD, you call this collection Freedom. How does the music speak to that in your mind?
Well, I think we have in some ways the concrete ways in which composers Danielpour or Finko were reflecting on totalitarian regimes and freedom versus oppression. But then we have the very dramatic personal stories of Mieczysław Weinberg and David Finko, both Jewish composers who survived persecution by both the Nazis and the Soviets. So there's that kind of personal narrative in there. And you hear it in the music itself. But then I think what's fascinating for me is taking a step back and just appreciating great works of music, like any great art, you can't always pin down every note and tie it to something. It's more of a cumulative effect of shifting moods, of really probing as the performer the depth of the work, and hopefully coming up with a performance that is very rich emotionally and can inspire a range of emotions in the listener, but also in some ways the listener has the freedom at all times to personalize that and come away with his or her own message.
Thanks so much, Mimi Stillman.
Thank you so much, Susan.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.